This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
I know you're out there
Good morning and welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. This morning, some exciting things happening at Middle Tennessee State University, and we're going to be talking about those things. The first is that exciting new facility that's just about ready to open, the MTSU Student Union Building. I can remember when the current one opened, and I can remember the one before that one. Don't remember when it opened, but I remember it. Nevertheless, each time the university has grown and needs a newer facility for student union activities. With us right now, Dr. Deborah Sells, the Vice President for Student Affairs and Provost for Enrollment and Academic Services. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us today.
Nice to be here.
And Sarah Sudek, the Associate Vice President for Student Affairs and Dean of Students. Did I get your name right?
You did.
Okay. I surprised myself then. It's good to have you both with us. Tell us about this facility, and when will it be ready?
We're planning to open during the opening weekend of the school year, which will be August 25th and 26th, which is a Saturday and Sunday. That's when our new students will be coming back, and we expect the building to be open and ready to go for that weekend.
So with this coming fall
semester? This coming
semester,
school year. We're just finishing up, buttoning up the last pieces of it right now.
Now, what will make this student union building different from the others? Is there anything, or is it just larger and better?
Well, it is larger and better, and it has many more facilities for our students. It was really envisioned as a place for students to have sort of, if you think of your home, this was really meant to be sort of the den or the family room of a home. And so this is meant to be a place where students can come and hang out, see their friends, get a bite to eat. There'll be a computing center in it, there'll be a movie theater in it, there'll be a large ballroom which will finally enable us to host some very large events, both seated dinners and also student events, gatherings for music and that sort of thing. It's 211,000 square feet is the size of the building. It's about a football field and a half long, to give it some perspective, three stories high. It's all dedicated really for student space, with the exception of a few administrative offices which are there to take care of the building. And we've also relocated the student involvement staff over there, so the staff that work directly with student organizations will also be located in that building.
Now, to give us sort of a feel of how this compares to the James Union Building, where we've had quite a few big events, what have you, that's where the big events have been happening, in the Tennessee Room. How does the ballroom compare as far as seating capacity, James Union versus the new building?
The new building will be able to do a seated dinner for as many as 840 people. And the James
Union, twice.
At least twice as big. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a large ballroom that has the ability to be subdivided down into five smaller sections. So groups that have a need for large space but not quite that large will have the ability to subdivide it down.
Will the James Union Building continue to be used as it has been in the past?
Absolutely. We're going to maintain that facility as well as the Keefley University Center. I think some folks think those facilities are going away. So while the Keefley University Center has been the student union as of late, we'll maintain the grill operation in there, so the food court venue, the theater will still stay, as well as reservable space mm-hmm. in the Keefley University Center. And then the James Union Building, both the Hazelwood Dining Room and the Tennessee Room will be available okay. for folks to reserve.
Now, the James, for people who are new to the area, James Union Building was, I guess you'd say, one of the earlier student union facilities, and now it also has a lot of that area has been converted into classroom space.
Correct.
Is that what will happen to the current facility, the Keefley University Center?
Yes, and I guess in some ways it will. Yeah. The third floor of the Keithley University Center has been what we consider meeting room space, and several of those, the majority of those rooms up on the third floor, will be converted to classrooms that the academic affairs folks will use beginning this fall to schedule, I think, primarily science classes in there.
And Keithley came on board in 67 or so, something
you
like
said
that?
You remembered when it opened, so well, we'll take your word for it. Sure. it was before my time, but yeah, I believe it was the late 60s that came in.
It seems like that was when it was.
And I think James Union was like the 40s.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
Yeah. I didn't say you did.
I used it until...
A lot of people have used it, yeah.
But and we thought that the Keithley Center was phenomenal, huge, but this one is going to be even larger than that one.
Absolutely. Well, the scope is different. When Keithley came in, I think the institution was around 8,000 students. And so now
if it was that, I'm not sure.
That was being
that
generous.
That was a generous statement. But you know, the feel is still there. I go back on campus now. I graduated in 68, but I go back and people say, "Oh, it's so different." Well, it is in a way, but the general feel of the campus is still pretty much the same, which is good.
Right.
I mean, it's a nice, friendly campus. Mm-hmm.
We hear that over and over again from our students. This summer, we've spent our time getting the new freshmen oriented. We do 11 orientation sessions for new students. And over again, what I hear from students and their families is that this doesn't feel like a campus of 27,000, which is what we'll be pretty close to this fall. They say over and over again, this place feels small, feels like I get a lot of personal attention. It feels like there's a place here for me to call home. And that's really, I think, what makes MTSU different than any other school in the state of Tennessee.
Now, as you continue to see the years tick away, it almost seems like the state is trying everything it can to slow the growth at the university. But that is not happening. It continues to grow. And as of several years ago, it was had the largest undergraduate enrollment of any state school or any school in Tennessee, larger than the University of Tennessee.
That's correct.
How close are we on the graduate level? Because that's the difference. How close are we to saying this is the largest school in Tennessee?
We're still a ways from that.
Okay.
Really, we see ourselves as an undergraduate teaching institution. That's our primary focus. It's not our goal, really, to overtake the University of Tennessee at Knoxville in terms of graduate programs. They have a very different mission than we do. Our mission is to teach undergraduate students, and that's really where our love is, and that's really where our focus is. So we will continue to grow our graduate programs, and we're very fortunate to have the excellent quality grad programs that we have right now. We expect those numbers to grow in the upcoming years, but really our focus will always be primarily on our undergraduate students.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about this new Student Union building. Is there a name for it yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
It's just our new Student Union building.
Actually, it's the MTSU Student Union.
That's right.
Is there going to be a contest or something like that?
We haven't really thought through that far yet. We'd like to get it open and operational before we go too much further down that road.
Oh, okay. So how do you get naming rights? If somebody listening has a large amount of money that they are thinking, I just don't know what to do with all of these millions.
We'd love to talk with them. They should make a call to Joe Bales just as soon as we get done with the show to talk
okay.
about that.
So if you would like to have it, your name,
your
Student
name
Union
on the
building, there is still that opportunity.
I would imagine we would make that opportunity available for the right kind of gift.
So contact Joe Bales.
Joe Bales is our Vice President for Development.
Okay. Tell us a little more. Give us sort of a tour. We're going to walk in the front door, and as we walk in that front door, what is going to just wow us? What is the wow moment we're going to get?
I think when you walk in the front door, the main entrance to the building, you're going to walk up to an information desk to help you get oriented to the building. And behind that desk are 9 video screens that are going to be able to show events in the building, information about the university. There's a huge and beautiful university seal embedded in the terrazzo flooring. And so it's really quite a spectacle when you walk in the door. It's a soaring 3-story atrium as you walk in behind glass windows. And so it's really got a huge wow factor when you walk in the door. Our task, our challenge has been, how do you take such a large building and make it feel warm and personal, like the feel of MTSU? And so I think you'll also be struck by the use of wood. There's a lot of wood in the ceilings and really warm tones that sort of warm up that terrazzo and warm up the glass, which will be on the whole west side of the building. Mm-hmm. On that first floor, there'll be a large new bookstore. Follett's is coming on campus to manage our bookstore operation. And then there'll be a large food venue. And Sarah ought to talk about the food purveyors that'll be there, because it'll be a little different than some of our other areas.
Okay.
We're intentionally making the food service offerings different in different locations, so you go to the destination of your choice. So Aramark continues to be our food service provider, and the branded concepts going into the new student union will be Dunkin' Donuts, Popeye's Fried Chicken, and Panda Express. And then Aramark will also be running some of their own concepts, offerings, gourmet hot dogs, soup, salad, baked potato bar. We're also going to be doing some deli options there, and the casual, right, I think I'm missing one. That's what I'm trying to think. Oh, we're also going to do a Mexican concept. That's the one I'm missing. And then we have a casual dining restaurant as well in the facility, where students and staff as well as visitors will be able to go in, similar to Nuke's or a Payway, where you order at a counter and then the food is delivered to your table.
You've almost described a luxury hotel. It sounds like, I feel like I've walked into the lobby of you know, one of these giant,
I think it will
beautiful.
Feel that way.
Yeah.
And you'll be neat. Able to see from that front atrium all three stories all the way up, so we're hoping folks will feel their location very quickly. So the first floor will be open, and it'll be largely this food venue that Sarah just described. On the second floor will be that large ballroom and reception waiting area to go into the ballroom, and then it will also have a number of small conference rooms that students can reserve for clubs and organization meetings or study groups. There's a beautiful student lounge with a fireplace and television. Lots of little nooks and crannies, all wireless for computers, so that we're hoping that students will all find their favorite kind of place within the union, the favorite hangout that they love for their friends, that becomes a regular gathering place for them. Then the third floor will be the few administrative offices that we're going to have in that building. The Student Government Association will be moving in. As I said, the student leadership and involvement staff will move in, and then the union operations staff that'll be responsible for all of the reservations for the building, they'll all be over there as well on the third floor.
And so this is all coming on board when the school opens the next semester in August.
That's correct, this fall.
And that's just
month
a few
away.
Weeks away.
That's correct.
Are you going to have an opening for the public, where the public can come check it out?
We are. The date of that is the 10th of
September 12th.
September 12th.
Okay.
And that'll be a big event for us. We need to recognize all the folks that have been a part of it. And this building particularly is very special to us. The students themselves voted back in 2006 to levy a tax upon themselves to pay for this building. And so it's entirely funded by student fees. They really had the chance to look ahead and see what did the people who were going to follow them need on our campus. And so back in 2006, they voted to levy this fee upon themselves. They've been paying that fee for the past several years, even though the union's been under construction. And so this fall when we open, we really want to recognize the folks that have contributed to that.
And what is the total fee coming to? What's the bill for the building?
Well, the total cost of the building, Sarah, was about $65 million. And so we'll be gathering that from a semesterly student fee over the course of the next foreseeable future.
Okay, so they didn't collect $65 million
not
in the
already,
past few
no.
years.
We'll I be thought. Paying off
Boy.
bonds. State bonds will be paying
I thought they'd
building.
Given themselves a
that
generous
would have been quite
amount.
Quite a tax. Quite a tax.
Well, I tell you, we're looking forward to this, and keep us informed. And we need to do a radio show out there when
oh,
that
we'd love to
time
do.
Comes.
That'd be great.
Dr. Deborah Sells and Sarah Sudak visiting with us, telling us about the new student union, the nameless student union.
The MTSU student union.
But if somebody wants their name.
That would be Joe Bales, B-A-L-E-S.
Money talks. Get with Joe. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
We're going to continue the conversation about MTSU. Stay with us. We're going to be heading to Japan, at least by way of radio.
You learn from those. those with different opinions. You're getting a street smart education from Good Neighbor Talk, WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Ford of Murfreesboro has just been named the number one Shelby Cobra dealership in the United States. Test drive the Shelby Cobra that has the all-new supercharged 5.8-liter V8. Ford of Murfreesboro was also named the number three dealer in the U.S. for selling the Mustang Roush. Come test drive and take home a new 540-horsepower Stage 3 Mustang from Roush today. Ford of Murfreesboro, your Roush and Cobra headquarters. On Broad at Northfield Boulevard and online at fordofmurfreesboro.com.
Hello, this is Lisa Halliburton from Bell Jewelers. Colored gemstones express your personality with color. Our gemstones are all natural, not man-made. From blue sapphire, vibrant ruby, green amethyst, orange citrine to black onyx, excite your mood and your wardrobe with a collection of colored stone jewelry from Bell Jewelers.
Visit Bell Jewelers on Broad across from Toots.
If your oil is leaking and your brakes are squeaking, call 896-1407, Roberts Discount Auto Repair. Service you can trust. On Broad Street, across from Ford of Murfreesboro. Honest service, fair prices.
Good morning. We have a bit of congestion this morning on I-24 still. We had an accident there earlier around the Bell Road exit. That's in the clearing stages. It should be out of the way in the next few minutes. Congestion seems to be easing there just a bit. On the south side, though, we also have Crossings Boulevard at Mount View Road, also Donaldson Pike at Murfreesboro Pike with an injury accident causing problems for us. Las Palmas Mexican Restaurant has been voted the best Mexican restaurant since 1990. Stop by for lunch or dinner online at LasPalmasMXRest.com. I'm Randy O'Brien with traffic on WGNS.
Thank you, Randy. What about that Murfreesboro weather brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
Scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible today. Otherwise, we'll see sunshine, a warm high of 93, and we'll have a light west wind around 5 miles per hour. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Thaluber. Right now, 79.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro, and we have hot, delicious Otis Spunkmeyer cookies every day. Come and see us, First National Bank of Murfreesboro, member FDIC, and home of Otis Spunkmeyer hot, delicious cookies.
The Braves have been right here since 1981. This is Don Sutton, and you're listening to WGNS Murfreesboro.
We're back again, and we're going to be talking about a trip that MTSU students took to Fukushima, Japan.
Correct.
Is that right?
Very good.
Never been there before. With us this morning, telling us about the trip, Dr. David Schmidt. He is the Vice Provost for International Affairs. Good morning to you.
Good morning, sir.
And you brought two of the students who went with you to Fukushima.
I did. I brought two stellar ambassadors that represented MTSU extremely well.
Fantastic. Let me get your names.
I'm Justin Bingham.
Hey, Justin. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good.
You from around here?
Yes, sir.
All righty. I've heard the name around here, as I just didn't know if you were from local or not. What about your cohort there?
I'm Mark Wester.
Hey, Mark. Good to have you with us today.
Of course.
What impressed both of you most about going to Japan? Had you been there before?
It was actually my second time going. I had been there once before in 2010 as an exchange student on a completely opposite end of the country in Fukuoka. But the thing that impressed me about really Fukushima is that how beautiful it is. You know, it's kind of like if you go out to the Appalachian Mountains or anything like that. It's like that everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous.
Sounds like it. What impressed you the most about that, Mark?
Well, I really loved the fact about just showing people that how much it's just full of life. It really is. We see in the news all the time it's a devoid place that no one's going to, and no one's trying to go to Japan, apparently. It's not as popular as a place anymore. But we went there, and we just could see all this life, everything, just talking with these people. It was just extravagant.
Mm-hmm. It's a high-tech country, I understand.
Oh Lord, yes.
Dr. Schmidt, what was the purpose in taking the students to Japan?
Well, in March of 2011, Japan suffered the tsunami and the subsequent nuclear accident. And so we have a sister school relationship with Fukushima University. And similar to what Mark said, you know, it suffered not just, there were 18,000 people passed away in this tsunami, but also, you know, it used to be a very vibrant tourist area. The fruits and vegetables that came from Fukushima were really well known. Fukushima peaches are very well known in Japan. And we wanted to kind of go back and do a disaster recovery program where our students were actually volunteering for all the displaced people. It's a very large coastal region that was hit, and one of the most, I think, memorable activities that we did was the students volunteered in a kind of a homeless shelter, temporary housing for the folks. So I think they got an appreciation of volunteerism, an appreciation of the beauty of Japan, the wonder of the people, how resilient they are in this disaster. Yeah. And I think you'll find that they'll carry on these traits when they come back here to Rutherford County or Tennessee or the United States.
Mm-hmm. So as you went to this area, you were obviously near the tsunami if you were working around homeless shelters.
Yeah. One thing that we did do, we went to, on two separate occasions. Once we went to a elementary school that had to be cleared out because I think the first two floors of it had been completely just wiped out from the tsunami. And, you know, you're walking around and you see a totally empty school that part of the structures are just twisted and mangled. And, you know, driving around certain parts of there, you know, like, it's weird because part of that area, you'd never imagine that anything happened. It just looks like just normal, vibrant city. But then you go out to the coast, and there's debris everywhere. There's boats and things and twisted metal everywhere. It's sad, you know.
This is over a year afterwards,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And how far away, when you talk about you're in this city and then you go to the coast, how many miles are we talking about? 20 miles?
Yeah.
Okay. So about like going to Woodbury.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not really that far if you think about it. It's just, it sort of seems really distant because you're going from, like, you wake up in the morning and you're in a hotel with a really vibrant city and everybody's walking around getting some coffee, and then 15, 20 minutes later, you're at a beach where there used to be 30 houses and there's nothing but rubble and foundation. And, you know, that's kind of hard to wrap your mind around that unless you actually see it.
And we're talking about an area that had a large population.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are no small cities, I don't think, in
Now,
Japan.
The tsunami came in about 6 miles, as far as 6 miles inshore. Mm-hmm. And when we went to the beach and we went to the shoreline, I mean, we were just amazed. All of us were kind of speechless at how basically buildings, lighthouses, everything was just completely wiped out. And, of course, it's wiped out really without warning. And so the first thing the Japanese Army did is they came in and they took care of bodies. Now, by the time we were there, they had accomplished quite a lot in a year, wouldn't you say, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Yes.
And now it's rebuilding spirits. And there's still, of course, a lot of physical work to do. And, you know, kind of rebuilding some of the buildings and the homes, of course. But things are lost. A lot of things were lost.
You wonder so much about the radioactive damage that was done, and as far as injuries to persons, the long-standing effect that's going to have on those people. Is it too soon to tell that, or were there any comments from the government?
I'll let the students talk about that, because, you know, we really did, we were very sensitive to that and the whole controversy around this. I'll let them talk a little bit about it.
You want to go first?
Okay. About that, that's understandably the main concern people here have, is like, you know, what about the radiation? What about the radiation? And even people in Japan I've talked to that live in other parts, when I say I went to Fukushima, that's the first thing they think of. Well, aren't you scared of radiation? But MTSU and the people at Fukushima University were so concerned about us, you know, and making sure that we're safe. They said, look, we're going to monitor that for you every single day while you're here, just to prove to you it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. And it's not. I mean, we had like 2 days worth of seminars on radiation and how it works, and we had, you know, all these technical devices that say, okay, you know, the area is safe. And like for 9 days we were being monitored, and at the end of those 9 days it said, hey, nothing's wrong here. But the problem is that when you say that, people think the entire area is just affected with radiation, and not just here in Japan and all, you know, most places of the world, because when something like that happens, like a disaster that size, you kind of don't want to go there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So it has had a devastating effect on their economy, not only by being able to produce things, but it's put to a halt, I guess, tourism.
In the prefecture in particular, mm-hmm. because, you know, you think of Fukushima, it's synonymous with Chernobyl. It's got a really bad connotation. But there was a perimeter around the nuclear power plant that is obviously, we did not enter. You cannot enter. You would not want to. But how long, when will they be able to clean this up? Time will tell. And it's going to be a major undertaking by the Japanese government and the Japanese people.
Now, if people are trying to put a timeline on this, this is March the 11th, 2011, last March, a year ago.
Correct.
A little over a year ago. So a lot has happened, a lot of improvement. Have other countries come in to help? Or?
Yes. I mean, you know, the U.S. has been there, China, Taiwan, Korea, Australia. They, you know, before we left, actually, the U.S. consulate or the ambassador for this region up in Nashville hosted the students for a dinner and showed a little video saying from the folks of Fukushima saying thank you. There was a huge undertaking, but there still is bitterness on behalf of the Fukushima people saying that, all right, the Fukushima, the Japanese central government in particular, came in and helped us, and now they're gone. So, you know,
Bitter against their government.
Correct. And also bitter against the power plant that had the Fukushima power plant. You know, and there's a very strong feelings about nuclear power right now in Japan. Close to 67% are opposed to it. And just about 3 weeks ago, they started up one of the plants down in the Osaka region, because the country is very dependent for their electrical power, especially in these summer months, on nuclear power. So it brings up a lot of contemporary topics that I think the students are engaged in.
But like you mentioned Japan being a place of a lot of technology. One of the things we saw while there, we got to go to an onsen, which is basically like a hot spring hotel. And
hot spring, what is that?
It's
a natural occurring spring where this
hot
resort.
Spring. Okay, I was thinking.
And one of the things that they showed us there is that how they're in the works of using the natural processes there to kind of generate energy, to kind of make themselves self-sufficient and not have to really worry about the dangers of radiation or things like that. So they're doing a lot in terms of both building up their spirits and trying to make themselves more, I guess, green.
Yeah. Alternative energy sources they're looking for.
So. Now, I think people would be surprised at how large these cities are. The one where you were, where the university is, what's the population?
Well, actually, Fukushima itself, the center city isn't that large compared to like Osaka and Tokyo. We're talking about 200,000, really. So it really had a small town feel and very similar to kind of Murfreesboro. I think that's one of the reasons why we got along so well with the folks there. It's just, it really was an amazing sister kind of institutional relationship.
Okay, I think we have a call here. Let's go to the phones, and you'll need your headphones to hear the phone calls. Good morning, you're on WGNS. We're talking about MTSU's trip to Fukushima. How are you today?
Yes, good morning, Bart.
Good morning.
Good morning, Justin, Professor. I was just wondering, I kind of grew up in a city over there called Okinawa. I was over there for 2 years, and I was wondering if y'all did any studies there. How far was that from where y'all was at? When you was over there. Again, my name is Ron. I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay, thank you, Ron. What about that?
Certainly. I can address that real quickly. Is that Okinawa is really far south. There's four major islands, and Okinawa is far below Kyushu. And we, of course, were up in just north of Tokyo, is where Fukushima is. So it wasn't even considered in that area of danger. But there was a really interesting part of the lecture series that we had given at Fukushima University about how the radiation is perceived. And for people in Fukushima, they know what the distance is. They drew a little map. But for people in Japan in particular, you know, they see it as it could be exposing their whole island. So, yeah, Okinawa was not touched at all. It is quite far south.
Now, obviously, there were large automobile factories in the area that were impacted. I know Toyota's inventory was hurt quite a bit. They slowed down. And what was interesting, which I think none of us thought about, was paint, how much paint is made there. And not just Toyota vehicles, but probably most of the vehicles that are sold in the country had some tie to the paint factories there in Japan, and those were evidently closed down too. So did you see factories that had been destroyed, or were they just closed down because the population had dwindled?
We actually didn't see major factories. We went into a lot of places where there was the fishing industry. We saw that. But I think it gives you an appreciation of global supply chains. And if one little link in that chain is broken, it can affect us here in Smyrna. Everything can just completely shut down, or at least for a week until they find an alternate source. We had a really interesting visit to an orchard, because I grew up in Japan. And when I was a child, Fukushima peaches, they were the best. And even the peaches we saw there, they were selling four peaches for $20. So that's $5 a piece.
Oh,
so
man.
Enjoy that peach and appreciate Kroger and Publix. But maybe Mark can talk about that visit, because we went to the orchard and how much it had impacted that small industry.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the cherries and apple juice.
Well, we were talking with our leader, William, who was showing us around, and we were going through this market area, and he said normally this area is just packed full of just people. It's a bustling, just amazing, just a little marketplace, and we're just driving through this area, and you just could see that there was no business going through this area. So as soon as we actually stopped, and we were talking to this person at a... Did he have the largest cherry farm there?
In Fukushima Prefecture, correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how badly his business was just hurt by this. It was just ridiculous. All of it, all this food was way below the radiation level that the national government would accept. And we were trying these out. We were tasting it. It was the best fruit I've actually had in my life.
Yeah, they were very good.
You've never tasted apple juice or cherries as good. I mean, it's ridiculous.
That's why they're so expensive. But it's a stigma, you know. And the owner of the orchard spoke with the students, and he had no bitterness. He said, look, I don't hold any bitterness towards the people in Tokyo who don't want to buy my peaches because they think they're full of radiation. But he had a real let's can-do attitude. One of the students asked him, I don't know who it was, but she said, might have been Bridget, or said, have you had to lay off any employees? And he said, I would never do so. I would sell my cars before I would lay off my employees, because they were his family.
Right.
And it was a very touching visit to see how these people, you know, can recover from such a disaster.
And I'll add to that, one of the reasons why we went there, not just to the orchard, but to the whole region, is kind of because of the people in that area, the businesses, the schools, just everyone. It's almost as if they're sort of locked in to the reality of their hometown. Like, they're the only ones that know what it's really like. You know, like, no one else is willing to venture there and see, or, you know, taste the cherries and how good they are, and they really are, or the apple juice, or meet with the children, or meet with some of the elderly and speak to them. Like David said, the perception of Fukushima shifts depending on what part of the country you're in, and it gets to a point where some people think it, you know, it's affected the whole area. And the reason why we went there is to kind of help Fukushima and help tell people outside of that area that, hey, it's a beautiful place.
So their own country is their own worst enemy, it sounds like.
In a sense, I mean, the look in their eyes, in particular in the temporary housing, when people lost their homes, a lot of the younger families, the people probably under the age of 55 or so, could move to different prefectures. And so when we went to temporary housing, you saw a lot of senior citizens.
Yeah.
And the look on their faces when they saw 10 American students come in and say, hey, we care about you. It was, I hate to steal the line, but it was priceless. It really was. And as a faculty member leading this, I was so very, very proud of these ambassadors of ours. They just... you know, they just meshed with these people and really made their day. It really was great.
Mark, you'll remember this, but you haven't really had an experience until you're sitting there teaching like a probably 7-year-old Japanese grandmama how to dance, you know, while you're sitting there. It felt for real like we were at a family reunion. You know, everybody just, they just instantly greeted us, and we were, you know, it was like I was around a whole bunch of aunts and uncles, man. It was...
The students made a lunch on a Sunday for the temporary housing group of people. It was quite an amazing little Sunday, wasn't it? And then they performed. They sang. And, yeah. And yes, the grandmothers did get up and dance with these young gentlemen.
And it was,
that's
awesome.
Great. That is great. It's just another way MTSU is reaching out. And thank you for sharing that story with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Look forward to hearing more about future trips that you're making, because I know you're going to be making more.
There's some pictures also on our website if they'd like
fantastic.
To check out the website.
What is the web address?
Just go to the MTSU website. MTS News has posted some pictures that the students took.
Very good. Dr. David Schmidt with us, along with students Justin Bingham and Mark Weston, who just returned from Japan and were phenomenal goodwill ambassadors for MTSU. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for taking that trip for everybody. Good morning. You're on WGNS. It is now 8:47.
The only place you'll hear good neighbor talk is WGNS, Murfreesboro. Hey, call a friend right now. Spread that news.
Did you hear that on the radio?
I heard it.
Over the years, I've encouraged you to save at Bell Furniture. Many of you have called me and said, you're right. They do have first quality name brand furniture at about half the price you pay at other stores. They have the comfortable catnapper recliner. This has both the heat and massage unit. Regular $899, but just $599 at Bell Furniture. Save with Perry Bell and Linda Ferris at Bell Furniture, 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna.
Heritage South Community Credit Union now has a new home, 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire.
This is Darlene Robinson, branch manager. I invite you to visit us soon and find out what your community's credit union is all about. We offer free debit cards and great checking, plus exceptional rates on loans and savings. You can join if you live, work, worship, or attend school in Rutherford, Bedford, or Marshall County.
Heritage South Community Credit Union, new offices at 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire. Federally insured by the NCUA.
Scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible today. Otherwise, we will see sunshine, a warm high of 93, and we'll have a light west wind around 5 miles per hour. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Thaluber. Right now, 79.
Murfreesboro owned. Murfreesboro proud. Talk radio WGNS, Murfreesboro. FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, TV 11.
Well, it won't be too long until the schools will be open. Public schools will be open again. But the teachers are making the, you know, every minute count. And right now, a lot of the teachers are at Middle Tennessee State University. They arrived there yesterday. Dr. Laura Clark is with us. And why did they arrive? What are they doing, the teachers there?
Teachers from not only just Tennessee, but around the country are on campus this week for a conference on arts education. And so they will be learning about teaching strategies, teaching methodologies. They'll be learning about arts integration, and they will be learning about dance and music and performance and art. And it's a beautiful time in the College of Education at MTSU.
So these are credit hours of credit that they get, which they need, I guess, to continue having their teacher certificate.
It can
right?
be part of their professional development. Yes,
okay.
In order to maintain their teacher license, they must have continuing professional development. So this could certainly be counted as that.
Mm-hmm. Why is it important for teachers to get together and learn techniques like they're going to be, or like they are learning right now? Because this is going on now, started last night.
It's important because it's energizing, first of all, to be with other people who do the same work that you do, mm-hmm. and to learn ideas from them and to see another way of doing what you do. It can revitalize your work. It's also important right now in the state of Tennessee in our education world, because arts integration offers a way to support some of the new changes in Tennessee as far as the Common Core standards and as far as some of the new teacher evaluation and some of the new expectations that we have for students. We know from research that student academic performance improves when there's a good arts program running with it, particularly when arts is integrated into the academic classroom.
This is especially true in the area of math, isn't it?
Certainly.
I mean, it seems like I've heard that.
Yes, and far too often people don't make a connection between those academic subjects like mathematics with the arts. Not just mathematics, but the whole STEM initiative, which is STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. They all have an artistic component to them if you look at it in that way.
Mm-hmm. So you have a real sales job to do, basically, to the legislators all over the United States. Since you're having educators from all over the U.S., it's the legislators who fund the schools. And unfortunately, when times are tight, it seems like the first place they start marking off to save money is the arts.
Regrettably, that's true. And so we have some legislators that understand this, and certainly the educators understand it because we see it every day. But yes, we do have a sales job, and that's why it's important to cite the research out there that actually shows that.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We're talking right now about a special program that's going on at MTSU for art education teachers all over the U.S., and let's have a question about that. You're on WGNS with Dr. Laura Clark. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How about you guys? Y'all good?
Doing fine. Thank you.
Hey, I had opportunity to work overseas about 6 months ago, and one of the stations that they allowed us to watch over there was CNN International.
Uh-huh.
And there were a lot of surveys that they showed about education and where America ranked in education in the world and everything like that. And they ranked, I believe it was Finland. It was either Finland or the Netherlands, but I believe it was Finland as the number one country in the world for teacher education and the way the teachers prepared and did for the kids and everything like that. Does a school like MTSU ever look out and check different opinions and see how other people do things to improve our educational system?
Well,
I'll hang up and listen to the answer. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. What about that?
MTSU has engaged in the last year in a number of initiatives where we are really transforming how we prepare teachers in Tennessee. We have embraced a number of things like the TEAM training, which is the TEAM model, is the new teacher evaluation in the state of Tennessee. We incorporate that as a main one of the main models of our courses where we train teachers, so that when our pre-service teachers go out into the schools, what they are evaluated with, they're very familiar with because they've used it in their courses.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, and we have, as professors, we've gained training in some of the other evaluation models. We are very familiar with some of the things incorporated in the new Tennessee curriculum, like Common Core standards, the American Diploma Project, now in Tennessee called the Tennessee Diploma Project. And of course, we align what we do in the university training to prepare them for understanding the TVAS testing and testing system,
mm-hmm.
the TCAP testing system, the end of course testing system. So we know that evaluation and assessment is critically important now for teachers, and our students, our pre-service teachers, who are the future teachers of Tennessee, will be very familiar with understanding what it means and understanding how to use it effectively in the classroom to help children learn.
Now, since this workshop that's going on right now for teachers, for art education teachers at MTSU, really fits in with his question, I'm wondering how much do you look at when you see reports showing Finland or whatever country it is? It seems like all the reports are showing the United States is down about halfway. We used to always be on the top. Is that accurate, or should we really be concerned? Is that an accurate reading?
It is accurate enough.
So we do have a problem then.
For us to look seriously at how we are training teachers and how we are teaching in mm-hmm. order to make improvement. However, there is one thing to consider in the international numbers, but it is not to be used as an excuse, and it is this. There are countries in the world who test students that are selected from a particular academic track, which means all students are not tested. In the United States, for the most part, we do random sampling in our testing, but we test from the full pool of students. So in research, if you are basing numbers on a selected group rather than a random and more complete group, those numbers are not always apples to apples.
Okay, but and I see where you're coming from, because in many countries, every student or every child does not get to go to school.
That's
only
correct.
They go to a certain grade level, and then they either go on to a higher education level or go out into the workforce.
Yes.
It's often the countries who determine that, and that's determined by the grades that they have, their aptitude. And it's been that way forever, hasn't it? I mean, as long as I can remember. But the United States has always been open to everybody, has an equal opportunity.
And not just open to everybody, but we are committed and required, actually, by law, to give educational access to all children who live here. Mm-hmm. And so that means children who have special needs, which back in the day, special needs children didn't go to school in the United States. I'm talking, 40, 50 years ago.
That's right.
But now, all children who live in the United States have full access to K-12 education.
So their totals, their results are in the average too.
That's correct. And, that's one of the blessings, the benefits of living in the United States, whereas that's not always true in other countries.
When does this conference end?
We run through noon on Wednesday at the MTSU campus, College of Education.
Sounds like a great opportunity for a lot of educators. How many teachers here?
We have about 350 people on campus associated with this conference. Educators, artists, presenters, and it's a fabulous week at MTSU.
Always is. MTSU, a great place. And Dr. Laura Clark visiting with us this morning. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Stay with us. Much more to come here on WGNS Murfreesboro. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.